Good evening, everyone. Welcome back to the Evermore YouTube channel and podcast. It's Chris and Mark back on a Monday night where we ask the same question we ask every Monday night. What's going on? I'll tell you what's going on, Mark. It's been a great weekend because there's no new injuries to report because we didn't even play a game. So happy days. What a weekend it's been. What's going on with you, mate?
It's been a few weeks so we can say that there's no further injury worries. It's a good one. Just an update, you know, I know the other week I was saying that I'd done my heel and it does feel a little bit better, so it's not so bad. But that's my little injury update for you. So fighting fit and ready to go.
We've hired a new physio. We got rid of the old one because he misdiagnosed Mark. He came back too early. He fell down the stairs and snapped his ligaments. And then, he didn't even realise you had a knee hanging off, mate. What was he like? We sent him up to Newcastle United and got rid of him. So that was the best way to deal with that ropey physio. But we're glad you're on the mend, Mark. And we have got a few things to talk about, even though Newcastle didn't play this weekend. We've got quite a lot to talk about. A massive bumper out of tune as well, which should be a great deal of fun. We'll get stuck into that at the end of the show. But just before we do, a little reminder, everybody, as we always say, if you're just checking us out for the first time, good evening, good to see you. We normally have you regulars in on a Monday night, but any new ones that slip through the net, you are welcome. We are over 7,400 subs now, so we're flying up the old 7,000 rankings, which is brilliant. We're heading to that 8,000 subscriber mark. Don't think I've forgot about the 7,000 prize. I am getting that. It is due next week. I should be meeting up with the person who has given me said prize, and then we will do the video for the 7K giveaway. I have not given that one, you know, any kind of afterthought. I'm just waiting for the prize because it is a real belter. But thank you so much, everybody who smashed that button. We really appreciate it. There's loads of room for you. It's all free content, Evermore. If you want to give a bit back to the channel, there is a member option too, where you get early access to a lot of the videos, like the Rumour Has It videos and the rant, whichever's annoying me that week. You can hear me moaning before everybody else, if you remember. So it's well worth clicking that button. And we are live tonight, as always. Jump in the comments. It always helps the episode flow. We've got a few in early doors. Ian's in the house. Good to see you, Ian. Antagonize is there as well. Isaac, what I want. That's a new name. Great name as well. Brilliant to see you. A few more you kind of sneaking as well. We've got Stevie B as well in the house. Good to see you, Stevie. Roger the Dodger is there. The old Artful Dodger himself is in the house. Kev is here on time. We weren't, Kev. We were a minute late, to be fair. That was because we were too busy nattering before we come on, to be fair. We do that quite often. Nathan's already asking us about the constant gardener, Mr. Ashworth. We'll probably get into that one, mate, I'm sure, and have a chat about him. I saw him wandering on B&Q looking for plant pots, so maybe he's about to stop doing that, I think, recently. Good evening.
I was going to say, just on the subject, antagonizes in the comments, isn't he?
Yes.
Kudos for your message too, Dan Ashworth, asking him to come round and do your gardening for you and how much it was going to be. So well done, sir. Well done.
Prune the hedges for me, Darren. Absolutely brilliant. Fantastic. But yeah, you're all in the house. Great to see you guys. We've got a good bumper show. We've even got a new member. We've got Christopher Moody, who's just become a member. Welcome on board, Christopher. Good to see you. Are you Christopher or Chris? Let us know, mate. I am Chris, unless I'm in trouble from the wife, and then I'm Christopher without a shadow of a doubt, mate. So Chris is what I like to be called. You let us know what you like to be called, Body Lad. It's great to have you on board as part of the squad as well. So let's get stuck in then, Mark. I mean, as we mentioned, no game this weekend. So really, we should be looking pretty rested and ready for the midweek game against Palace, which we will have a preview coming out for in the next day or so, and then the post-match on Wednesday. Yeah, so we should have time for the lads to rest, Mark, and go at this, as I suppose, as full strength as we can do, given all the injuries in the background.
Yeah, I mean, the likes of Hall, and I think we were talking before we came on, weren't we? Tino and Hall will be fit and ready to go. I think it's a week closer to Joe Linton being back in the squad, Wilson back in the squad. Suddenly there's options. Where have they been all season? All of a sudden there's players in the squad. I don't know what to do. It's good. It's coming down to the crunch end of the season. Sitting in sixth, I think that's probably now the realistic finishing point. And with players back, with players fit, with those games left to go as well, you run into a really nice patch of games to end the season. He says touching wood for everybody.
Steady. we'll have them bottom of the cupboards touching
wood.
Well,
exactly.
Steady. It's not 10 o'clock yet.
Palace had a blistering result of the weekend, but, you would like to think a good result there. And then followed up with the two bottom sides and Brighton, who haven't been pulling up any trees. wonderful game at Manchester United that you'd love to go and ruin the rest of their season and then ending up with Brentford. So there's the realistic possibility that you could almost run the table at this point, certainly end the season unbeaten. And that would... I've just seen Ian's message there. Chris Wood.
But Chris Wood not. Chris Wood not touch any wood. How dare you? How dare you make those accusations, mate?
But yeah, a week's rest, a week and a half's rest is something that I think they're pretty unused to over this season so far. So it should, Palace at the weekend as well that have played and put a lot of effort, well, I say a lot of effort into that West Ham. They strolled it, to be honest. But extra rest, you think going there with a bigger squad, with more players available, that it should be a good time now.
Yeah, I mean, Palace are a funny side. They're one of them sides you can never predict what they're going to do. You know, they're either shite or they're brilliant, and there's no kind of happy medium with Palace. But they have got some dangerous players, as you rightly say. You know, I mean, isn't Mateta up front a handful on his day? I think Eze is a really good player. Obviously, Elise is dangerous as well. And they have got some decent players. I really like the kid they signed from Blackburn in midfield, as well as at Wharton. He looks like a real player. I know we were linked to him as well. So they have got some players who could cause us bother. But I think certainly the lads will be buoyed after that Spurs result. I mean, I'm not sure what Eddie's going to do, Mark, whether he's going to stick with that crazy system that he had with three at the back and then the two drop in, or whether he'll just drop back to a 4-3-3 if Tino and Hall are fit. He might, but it's nice to have options. And if we don't know, the fucking Palace manager doesn't know. Do you know what I mean? So that's a great skill to have, really, or an option to have in a background. And you're right, if Callum Wilson is even fit to be on the bench, he loves a goal against Palace, that handsome bastard, doesn't he? Loves a goal against them. So he's a real threat off the bench as well. I mean, and with Wilson too, we'll get onto Wilson in a minute, he'll want to try and finish the season strong to remind everybody he's still a good player at the top level. You know, I think it's way past the sell-by date from get anywhere near that England squad for the Euros. That's gone. That ship has firmly sailed, Callum. You know, no matter how good-looking you are, you're not going to charm your way into that boat, mate, I tell you that. But, you know, he'll want to show everybody he's still the real deal as well. But I mean, the way Isak's playing, you know, as Craig Hope christened the notorious B.I.G., I really want war flags to make that flag, to be honest with you. That'd be amazing. But if those three are bang at it and ready to go, I think there's gaps in that Palace defence, and I think we could really do them some damage if we rock up and play the way we can do, mate.
Yeah, exactly. Look, you just start and you play the way that they did against Spurs, come out and really sort of take the game to them, but you play on their strengths, you play on that little bit of more of a counter-attack. Not fully, but they utilised the counter so well against Spurs and brought them on. And Palace will like to attack. You mentioned it, Eze and Lisa are fabulous footballers if they're fit. And they'll want a good end to the season as well. And there's the potential that they're playing into the shop window, too. So they'll want to end their season well. But there are gaps to exploit. They've got some really good players in that side, but they're just not at that sort of same level. So you'd think the likes of Isak and Gordon and co will exploit the gaps that are there and punish them. So it is going to be a good watch. And if it doesn't work, then there are still options. You know, like you said, if Wilson's fitting off the bench with half an hour to go, if there's a need of a goal, he does. I mean, it's what he does best. He does score goals if he's fit. And to have him back is a huge thing for Newcastle, because it just, if he's act running on empty or you know, they target him and keep him completely out of the game, it just gives it another option. And that's been missing for so long.
Absolutely. It should be a good game to look forward to. We'll jump on and do a preview, get that out in the next day or so. And then obviously we'll be on for the post-match as well on the Wednesday. But I'll tell you who is definitely going to be there, because he is not suspended. He did not get any yellow cards and looks very much like he could be here for the foreseeable future. And that is the midfield maestro, that is Bruno Guimarães. This story broke by Luke Edwards in the Telegraph. Got to give Luke credit. We have done Luke at well, I wouldn't say done him with the service. We have outed him for talking shite, one of the better word, in one of our rant videos previously. But he was on the money with this one, finger on the pulse. So it looks like Bruno has got himself a new gaff mark. Only a little modest abode of £4 million in Darris Hall for the Guimarães clan to run around. I know, bless him, you know. I wonder if he's got like a spare room to do podcasts in. Who knows? Maybe he'll have to do it in the living room or the kitchen like us. But obviously, it's a great sign. And everybody's jumped on the bandwagon. Everyone's got the party streamers out saying that this is a sign that Bruno was going to be here, certainly for the immediate future, as in next season. I mean, these things can change at any given time, but it's got to be a good sign, Mark, hasn't it? Joe Linton's got a new deal done and dusted, his best buddy, and now he's buying a new gaff in Darris Hall. It's got to be pointing to the direction of he's staying, despite all these bullshit links in the background.
Yeah, you'd like to think so. You don't start to do this if you've got any intention on walking away. I mean, time will tell, but I can't see it. And he's got his mate. His mate's got his new deal. And it's noise, isn't it? And, you know, from a lot of it, it's noise about Isak. It's noise. The latest one was Barcelona one are going to sign Isak in the summer. I mean, they couldn't afford to buy me, let alone Alexander Isak. So, look, it is a good sign. You know, he's got his kid and stuff, and they're grown up here, and he is settling, and but as I put it, he's laying down his roots in the Northeast for now. So, you know, for the side and for the club and for the fans, long may that continue, because he's just going to be such an integral part of this squad, hopefully for the next few years at least.
Absolutely. Yeah, Kev saying, where's the cat? Mark's loaned him to Bruno to settle in his new gaff. They're running around in the West Wing somewhere, Kevin, the old, the new Guimarães household, I think. I don't know where the cats are, Mark.
They're both asleep. However, if you can hear any scratching, it's the fucking dog in the background scratching on the door.
Yeah.
Mark is like
Dr. Doolittle, you know, but we'll have to do a separate offshoot of like Fazza's Farm or something like that, where you've just got loads of animals running around, you know, like parrots flying around the top of your head and stuff like that as well. But it is good news. I mean, I think, like I say, there's a lot of noise about this, but you look at the kind of the brass tacks here. You know, you've got Bruno's missus posting a picture of the, you know, standing in front of St. James's Park pitch saying, you know, home. You've got this new house. You've got Joe Linton signing a new contract, you know. And I think, you know, most importantly, Bruno has achieved so much by being a Newcastle United player. You know, they all keep talking about how, oh, he's such a good player. He's so good. He's just not, you know, Champions League. He's played Champions League when he's been a Newcastle United player. He's a Brazilian regular and in the starting 11 as well as a Newcastle United player. You know, he's bossing games against some of the best midfields in Europe as a Newcastle United player. So he's achieving a lot of what he wants to achieve as a Newcastle United player. Now, listen, I'll caveat that by saying, depending on where we finish at the end of this season, if we finish Europa League, which I think is looking good like we will, and you've got to give Eddie credit for that, as I said, and the players. Next season, you've got to be aiming for Champions League if you want to keep a hold of the likes of Bruno and Isak, because in next summer, you know, not this summer coming, next summer, if we're not in the Champions League and these teams come sniffing, we may very well struggle to keep a hold of them, Mark. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think the longer you go into the project, the more likely it is that those players, well, they're getting older, so they're going to want to play at the highest level, you know, for as long as they possibly can. That also maximises the amount of money they can make as well. So, If it is a year down the line and Europe is iffy, or Champions League doesn't look like, you see the vultures circling again. It's always going to happen. But he does seem like he is settled. And, you know, the talk from the others as well is that, you know, they're happy with the way that the project had gone. It was never going to be Premier League champions in 2 or 3 years. Funny enough, I have had fish. I have, and a hamster at one point. I haven't had a tortoise.
Yet.
We'll draw the line there. But where was I? Thanks for that. You completely throw me. No. I do think there's, you know, Bruno said he's happy with the way things are going. He's happy with the project. He's happy to be part of it. There's almost the age that he is, there's no need to leave immediately. There's no probably need to leave next year if he didn't want to, because he still have a good 4 or 5 years left at the very top. If they're a step closer, if Newcastle are knocking on the door of Champions League again, and realistically, had England not English teams not shit the bed in the last week in Europe, or the last 2 weeks in Europe, then fifth would still be an option. And there was a real potential at one point that Newcastle could actually overtake Spurs into that fifth position, or Villa into that fifth position, which seems now unlikely. So there was the potential that it could have come this season again, but Europa League is another step in the right direction. I know some don't see it as that, but it's consistency now. It's consistency playing at the higher end of the league, and even with the injuries, you take this as another step in the right direction. The players can see that too.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's all a lot of Southern media, you know, shit stirring, really. I think, you know, I listened to Craig Hope, who's on with True Faith of the day with Si Campbell. I really like Si. Actually, I've had a pipe with Si. He's a really nice fella as well. But, you know, they were saying that all of this noise about Harwin and everything else, it all seems to be coming kind of south of the border, you know, because they're so adamant that it's quite paradoxical, really, isn't it? Because Howe's not good enough to take Newcastle to the next level, but he's asserted for the next England job, which is just makes me laugh. You know, talk about contradicting your opinion. But then someone like Bruno Guimarães and Alexander Rizak are so good, but the top teams totally passed them by. They went under the radar. And now, because people can see how good they are, they go, oh, why didn't Arsenal sign them? Why didn't, you know, Man United sign them? Why didn't Liverpool sign them? Why didn't Barcelona sign them? And all of a sudden, these teams are going to get them in the summer. And you think, well, no, not really, because you had your chance and you were asleep behind the wheel. And they've gone to this club. We've got this project. You know, Bruno's wages have increased considerably, you know, in the short time that he's been here. He is the main player in this team. Him and Alexander Rizak are the two main players in this team. I wouldn't be surprised if Rizak gets his deal renegotiated as well to try and keep some of these other clubs at bay, because he is the main man. You know, we'll talk a little bit about maybe what's going to come in the summer in a minute when we talk about Wilson. But, you know, for me, these two are the two players you build this team around. Them and Sven Botman are the three key players in this team. When Botman is obviously fit and not running around with his ACL flopping out the side of his sock, you know, thanks to the whatever was going on with that shit. But, you know, those three players are massively important to us. I'm not trying to diminish Fabian Scher or Trippier, but their better days are behind them. You know, they're coming to a part of their career where their bodies are going to take longer to recover. They're not going to be as influential in games. I mean, Fabian Scher's a freak. I mean, how he's been so good at that age all season is just phenomenal. But you can see Father Time is catching up on Kieran Trippier right now. But we've got a ready-made replacement there in Tino Livramento to step in and do not just a decent job, do a fucking amazing job, possibly a better job, because he gives you something Trippier doesn't give you. And that's pace, where Trippier's got the ability to whip the ball and everything else, but we can find other players that can do that. Tonali's got a bit of that in his locker, you know, when he comes back into this setup, you know, so he can take over. We saw how good Gordon's set pieces were against Spurs, you know. So what we're going to lose in Trippier, I think we can gain in amongst the squad. But players like Alexander Rizak, players like Bruno and Botman when he's fit, they're almost, at the minute, invaluable to the team, Mark. And I can't see Newcastle letting any one of those three go while this project is still in full flow.
No, and I don't think they need to. There's all this talk about PSR and Newcastle battling against it, but there are sellable assets there that don't need to be the big name players. Look, you'll get money in. It might not be full price, but you're going to get money in for the likes of Wilson, for the likes of Miggy, and they will go against PSR. They're going to put right some of the problems that may exist. But we've talked about it a number of times, and I think everybody has, that there's more commercial revenue coming into the club for next season. So, you know, the deals with Salah, the deals with Adidas, the more commercial deals that the owners will bring in, and the Champions League money that will get accounted for in this season's account as well. It all goes to kind of boost what Newcastle have available to them. And I cannot see at all them sanctioning the sale of a Bruno or an Isak or you know, well, not Botman with his injury, but you get the point. Those young players, those key parts of the squad now, they're not going to go anywhere unless a ridiculous offer comes in for one of them. You know, if suddenly Barcelona offer 200 million for Alexander Isak, then fair enough. I would
game changer.
Thank him for what he does and send him on his way, because 200 million, you're not turn that down. But they're just not going to. There's no need. I really don't see the need for them to do it unless things are really, really dire. I cannot see that being the case. They're not overspent.
No, it's just noise in the background, yeah. Stu Mag's got a question, Mark. So as you're the keeper, even before Pope's injury, I still think we need a new keeper, which is a good point. Mark, being a keeper, do you have concerns in the nature of his injury even when returning with Nick Pope? What's your viewpoint on Pope, man?
I mean, I do, because it's the second time this has happened to him in 5 years. He was out for a huge spell at Burnley in 18-19, I think, where he missed 30-odd games then with a dislocated shoulder. And we've seen with Murphy that, you know, unless you have it fixed, but even then,
Dr. Doolittle, he talks to the animals.
I do, but they don't listen. Murphy's in a different position, obviously, on the pitch, and in what he does with it, it's not as major a problem with his shoulder going as Pope's, because Pope is needing, obviously, to be diving around, to be going to catch a ball, and he's going to get bumped. And I think that's what happened last time. He got into a challenge with another player and his shoulder popped. So there is a worry that this could come back. He's not getting any younger. I mean, he's not an old man yet. No, he's no Ben Foster, but he is getting on. And those injuries will take their toll a little bit more. And if that is a recurring, I can't remember which shoulder it was from the last time, but if it's the same one, then it is a worry. And I agree, I think goalkeeper is a place that needs to be strengthened, but I'm not entirely convinced that you need a starter for now. You know, I think that, I said in the goalkeeper video the other week, I think Nick Pope is fine for now. I think you get another year or 18 months or 2 years out of him before the absolute necessity of getting a new goalkeeper in, because he'll do you a brilliant job. But you start to look at who comes in next. Can you bring in a young goalkeeper to work with him and work behind him to be the eventual, you know, player that takes over from him? And if they push on more quickly, he takes over a little bit more quickly. So I do think that's an area of need going on. But if Pope is fit and firing for the end of the season and going into next year, great. I don't think you necessarily have to replace him now.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of talk about, in previous league before, was it the Valencia keepers, Mamalashvili, the Georgian international.
Yeah.
And he's a young keeper, certainly as far as keepers go. Darren's saying, what do you think of the Ramsdale links? I mean, Ramsdale's a good keeper. He's a little bit of a loose cannon, though, isn't he, in terms of his character and stuff like that. I know Eddie's had him before, and he kind of credits Eddie for leveling him out a bit, doesn't he? So you just don't know. He's very good with his feet, Ramsdale, as opposed to that's something the Pope's been criticised for. But the cost that they'd want Ramsdale for, you look at someone like, you know, Mamardashvili over in Valencia, he'd be half the price. He's got a phenomenal, you know, kind of presence as a goalkeeper. He's agile, Mark, as well, isn't he? He's very, very good, you know, in terms of shot stopping. He's good with his feet. You know, he's quick off his line, you know, but he's a young keeper and maybe a keeper who won't expect to strut into a Premier League top six side and be a starter, you know. So he could very well tick the box for what you're talking about as a keeper, whereas Ramsdale wants to come in as a number one. So I don't think the Ramsdale thing is probably going to work unless Pope's going to be a number two. And I can't see Pope being a number two, you know? So it's a tricky one, isn't it?
No, I don't see Pope sitting around being a number two. I don't think he'd be happy with that role. I think he is definite number one material. Could easily move on to another
60 million for Ramsdale, Duncan saying that.
Chance. I like Ramsdale. I do think he's a good goalkeeper, but he has ricks in him. You know, he's not the greatest decision maker. He does claim a cross well. If you look at his stats, his number of crosses stopped is ridiculous. It is really, really high. But his decision making is poor. He gets caught. His positioning is not the greatest. It is good on the deck, but I don't think his sweeping's as good as Nick Pope. I don't think, you know, Nick Pope sits the higher level of sweeper keepers. He may not be the best at being able to distribute the ball afterwards, but he mops up well.
What about Trafford? RG Fox is saying, I mean, Burnley probably likely to go down. I'd imagine. What do you think? Who's your favourites to go down while we're on that subject?
I think the three that are there now will go down. Mm. Unfortunately, because the turd that won't flush appears to have saved themselves again. I'd like nothing more than to watch Everton go down once, because they've just been circling the drain for too long, and I'll just use keep going with that metaphor. But they've been circling that drain for far too long, and eventually they're going to fall through. But they look to have got away with it again this season. But look, Trafford, I like. I think he's had a rough time this season. He started really, really well. He certainly did well for England. I think he probably needs another season of football somewhere. Staying at Burnley and getting that in the Championship is probably
doing the Championship. I think so. For me, it reminds me a bit of what we had with Freddie Woodman. You know, when he had all these great kind of credentials at, you know, England youth levels and stuff like that. And then we put him in. I mean, granted, we put him in the Premier League against Cristiano Ronaldo, which isn't really a young keeper's ideal scenario. But, you know, he started to get, you know, a lot of pressure on him, didn't he? And the defence was a bit leaky in front of him and everything else. And I just think, you know, that's the danger with Trafford is, you know, if Pope's shoulder goes again and he has to play a run of games, it's not going to be good if we're trying to push for top four and he's dropping balls and flapping and stuff like that, is it really?
No, but I think he's got enough experience in him to come in and not be put off by that if he had to come in and do that. The difference with Woodman just wasn't ready. He really wasn't. Good evening. I have this conversation quite a lot with people, actually, because I do talk about goalkeepers an awful lot. Shock.
You do. You're a funny breed, you lot.
I am a fully paid up member of the goalkeepers union.
You are. You got scars to prove it.
Oh, definitely, most definitely. I loved Woodman when he, you know, as he was sort of behind the scenes, I thought he had potential to be the next long term goalkeeper. I thought there was potential for him to get it to the England setup at one point as well. I thought he played really, you know, he looked like he could do it at one point. But the problem is that the gaps in his profile and in what he did, there were far too many schoolboy errors that he made. The simple things like his footwork, and we talked about this at the time, I think. Certainly that game against Manchester United, it was just something simple. It's footwork against a long range shot. It was all wrong. And you watch him time and time again, and his footwork never really improved. And that's so fundamental, because if you don't get that right, you never get into the ball. And there were too many times he would get caught out by that. And he never progressed, really. He went out on loan and he didn't pull up any trees, because he just looked... He reached his peak really, really early, and he never progressed beyond that, which is such a shame.
He was a good keeper, wasn't he? We had high hopes for him. But, you know, and the keeper's definitely going to be an area that we cover. But obviously with the FFP, there's going to be a few probably going to be leaving in the summer. And obviously this news was circulated around X, but via journalists. And you can take it with a pinch of salt, I suppose. But it shouldn't surprise any of us that apparently Wilson's people, his agents, have started to look at a move away from Newcastle United. I mean, it goes without saying, Mark, Callum Wilson has been a fantastic player for Newcastle United. If he does go in the summer, he'll go with everybody's thanks and appreciation for the amount of goals he scored. You know, what has he got, about 47 goals in 100 games or something daft like that? You know, his stats are phenomenal. Yes, he's had a lot of injuries. That's kind of played Callum's career for a long time. But when fit, he's a phenomenal centre-forward, and he's still capable, very capable of scoring goals at the top level. I mean, people have been talking about Saudi leagues and stuff like that. I mean, if Callum wants to line his pocket with all that gold, I'm sure he can. He's at the right club to get a club in Saudi, I'll tell you that for free. They'll probably give him a private jet over there, but I used to think he could do a job in the Premier League. But just before we get into the targets, because there is a couple of targets linked, and I think if there's a realistic chance they could come in, either one or both of them, then I think definitely Wilson and possibly Almiron are going as well, Mark. But just a little bit on Callum Wilson. I mean, you know, you can't blame him for maybe thinking he needs to move away, because Isak's the main man. And if we're going shopping in the summer, Callum doesn't want to be number three on the list, does he really?
No, and I think that would be fair enough to him to allow him to move on at this point, because it's always been the problem with him, certainly for the last couple of years. His injuries have just absolutely hampered him. It hasn't stopped him from scoring goals. His strike rate is brilliant. What's he, 46 in 104 games?
Amazing, amazing record.
Which is brilliant. Look, he'll go and score your goals. He'd go and you know, do a job for any Premier League side, if you can keep him fit. But you're right. I don't think he's going to want to sit around and be a number three striker. And he's definitely a player that, when fit, you can make some money on him to be able to ease any PSR worries or anything like that, because he, you know, 10 to 15 million from, which seems like an absolute steal, you know, given his goal record. But it just will be a case of thank you very much and on you go, and you know, we wish you the best of luck, because you've done phenomenally well over the last, what, four seasons. And he goes with everybody's wishes and stuff, but I can't see him staying. I can't genuinely now. I think with the injury record, with him missing so many games this season, he's definitely a player that you start to look to move on now. And there's money there. There's, you know, the contract. He's not out of contract, so there is money to be made on him if you can get the right club to come and do it. One of the promoted sides, maybe a Leicester that potentially need a striker.
See that. Because Vardy's not coming up with them. He's staying in the Championship. I don't think he's barely playing now, isn't he? So he's not coming up to the Premier League with him. It'll be Iheanacho, and then they'll be looking for another centre forward.
Yeah, so a team like that. I saw somebody joke, is it on Twitter the other day? It kind of joke. I think Che Adams to do a deal where he goes one way and it sits in the background. I'm not sure I'd downgrade like that.
No.
But
I'd rather have fucking Fester Adams than Shea Adams, mate. That's what I'd rather have. No chance.
A kind of sentiment behind it, because you make a bit of money and you get a player to come and sit on your bench for next to nothing. But no, I think that's too much of a downgrade. Certainly. But I think he moves on, and I think you're looking at a you know, a second striker coming in to come and fill the gap behind Alexander Isak now. Or maybe another one as well, because you probably want a younger player coming in to come and do that role as well and be the third choice if you can. Because you've got to think about the future going forward and sellable assets as well. So
yeah, but I mean, Mark's saying Jared Bowen would be very good replacing Callum Wilson. I bet he bloody would, Mark, to be fair. I'm not sure West Ham would sell him to us, mind you, but still, he would be a great player. I mean, there is talk about Sesko. We saw a comment there before from Aaron, who obviously doesn't rate Sesko as highly as his teammate. But I mean, the thing about Sesko is he's only 20. You're kind of paying for that player that he will become, I suppose. It's a little bit like the Erling Haaland scenario when Dortmund signed him. You know, there's something there. There's no doubt that there is a player there. He's got ability. His international goal record is phenomenal. It's absolutely incredible. He scores decent goals. He creates. His build-up play is good as well, in terms of getting his other teammates in the position. Very different striker to Alexander Isak, but at 20 years old, he'd be the youngest striker out of the two of them. He wouldn't expect to walk into a team or walk to start in 11s week in, week out. And I think he would excel, Mark. I think he would grow. He'd become a better player. You know, there's links to Is it a young? Is it the Peterborough striker who's a real hard pressing centre forward from the front?
Which sounds like
that's a very Eddie style player. You know, who's who looks a player. So you've got to be creative, I think, with FFP and PSR. But I think if or when, probably more when Wilson goes, I think we will get somebody in who is a level, I think, to give you at least what Wilson's given you in terms of that goal threat. And then obviously in an ideal world, more fitness, which, because that's not very hard, is it, with Callum at the minute, unfortunately. You know, as good as he is, he gets injured quite a lot. But so the Sesko links, I think, in the way that the club scouted him, to me, seems like he's going to be the front-running target. Ekitike has been mentioned a couple of times in the comments. What's your take on him? 14 million, he's available in the summer for, do you think? Would you go near him or would you give it a swerve?
Is this Ekitike?
Ekitike. I wouldn't go near him, personally.
I mean, I said this the last time we talked about it. He pops up every few months. I think...
I like Smodic. Smodic is a good shout.
Yeah, dude. I do like Smodic. I really do. And he's really come to life this season. You know, he's funnily enough, after, you know, a move from Peterborough, Peterborough have a record of having these strikers and then getting them, you know, selling them on for... getting him in for nothing, selling one for usually pretty big money, and then finding the next one to take over. Ekitike.
It's a gamble.
It is, but I think the easy thing to kind of go back to is his reaction when, you know, there was the potential of him coming to Newcastle the first time round, and I think that was really badly handled. I think he probably made the right choice for him at the time in staying in France. And I completely understand not wanting to move away completely from your family and stuff when you are so young and to a new country. It takes an awful lot of bottle to do something like that. You know, not everybody can be a Jude Bellingham and move to a different country twice within a couple of years and absolutely boss it everywhere you go. But there is a striker in there. You know, he hasn't suddenly become such a bad player in the last 12 to 18 months. He's just not played enough. I do think there's a good striker in there, and certainly one that come in and play second fiddle, definitely. And 14 million seems a reasonable fee for a second striker. It really does.
It's a bit of a snip. I mean, I think football's a very fickle game. If you come in, there'll be fans going, ah, fucking wanker. He scores a couple of goals, I forget all about it. It all disappears into the ether. But Mark's saying about Ferguson. It's an interesting one with Ferguson because Brighton were wanting 100 million quid for the kid. You know, short off the back of scoring a hat-trick against us and then a couple of other goals. It's gotten really, really quiet as Ferguson. You know, and obviously with the talk of the Zerbi maybe fucking off in the summer. I wonder whether you could get Ferguson for less than 100 million. And is that player in there that Eddie could get out of Ferguson market and get more of the Ferguson that battered us, you know, having regular performances rather than the Ferguson that seems to have gone a little bit into hiding this season for Brighton? What's your take on that? I mean, 70 million quid for that kid for me is too much money and they want 100. He's not scored enough goals to warrant that fee, in my opinion, right now. But I do like him. And I think he could be a really good striker, but you know, what do you think about Ferguson?
I do think he looks a really, really good prospect, and he hasn't played enough for me, and it's an odd one, isn't it? Because he burst that hat trick he scored, he really burst through, and you just thought, yeah, here we go, this is going to be the start of something, but.
He's done fuck all since then, really, hasn't he? So
I'm just looking for it. He's not really played. I mean, he started 15 games this season. He scored 6 goals. He started 10 last season. He scored 6 goals. So at least he's consistent.
He loves a 6.
So, and he's, what is he now? How old is he?
He's got to be about 19, isn't he? He's only young.
He's 19. He's 19 and a half now. So by the time the new season rocks around, he's... You know, he's going to be nearly 20. I think he's going to be pushing for a starting place at Brighton, definitely.
Got to be, surely.
I don't think he's worth anywhere near 100 million.
No.
But they'll want big numbers for him. They'll want to do what they've done with Caicedo and Cucurella and that. They're going to want him to do that. Roger, I just don't think we've got enough data on him to know that. We haven't seen him enough to wonder whether he's a purple patch player because he just hasn't played enough.
As Marcus says, he needs more games. 35 yeah, exactly. million, Marcus says, for him. And that's probably about the going rate. He's had injuries as well, Dean says.
Yeah, he has. I mean, he's not been out long term. And I think that's key. He's not like he's missed 30 games or something like that. He's had niggly injuries. He's missed sort of 5 or 6 games, I think, through injury. So it's not so bad. It wouldn't be like buying another Callum Wilson and sitting him on the, you know, in the treatment room for 6 months of the year. But he needs games ultimately, and I think he as a number two again. I mean, if you could get him somewhere in the region of 35 million, that's probably not bad business. But is he going to come in and do the job that Eddie Howe wants him to do? I think he probably could. I think he's a great striker. He needs game time. He needs to play. Ultimately, he might be better suited staying where he is and getting a season, full season as the number one striker under his belt there.
Yeah, as Ian says, if Ferguson's worth 100, what's Isak's value? Probably closer to what Mark said, 200.
And a couple more zeros, I think.
And a couple more, yeah. Audrey Fox is saying Ferguson can be outstanding, but not a 30 million gamble at the stage where that vital coin to fill other positions. I do agree with that. I think, I think we have to buy right this summer. You know, I think, you know, last summer, you know, I know we're starting to see Hall kind of kick on a little bit now, but it's taken such a long time. I mean, outside of Tino Livramento, really, we haven't seen a great deal from the summer signings. Obviously, Tonali had the ban. You know, Barnes had his Rivita foot, and he was done for the entire season. Outside of Tino, they've not been great signings. I mean, I do think Barnes will be a really good player for us. I think he's already shown this season what he's capable of. Get him fit, you know, in fire and pre-season next season, he could be an unbelievable player for Newcastle United. But, you know, we have to get it right this summer. Big, big summer. Get rid of the dead wood, I think, as Duncan says there. Get rid of the dead wood and the injury-prone players. Save a fortune on wages. And then we can go big in the summer. Yeah, I love him as well, Sean. He's a cracking player. He's at Sporting Lisbon now. I think he's just scoring goals for fun. He was ex-Coventry, wasn't he, Mark? But I'm not sure we'd be able to get him because he's a pretty penny as well, isn't he? But I think we'll have to get it right this summer. And, you know, I mean, there was a play we did a video on earlier going on to Miggy, I suppose, away from Wilson. I think Miggy's gone. Personally, I think he's away. You know, we're going to cover Minter in a minute. He's had an eventful weekend as well, hasn't he? But Minter's been brilliant for Feyenoord this season. He's going to come back in the summer. The club's going to look at him. There's been links to Chiesa, who can play on the right-hand side. Anyone who watched the video would have seen he's played a lot of his games, his 300-odd games, on the right-hand side, right wing for Fiorentina and right midfield, and he scored a lot of goals there, and he can play through the middle. Yes, he's had injury problems in the past. That big Achilles was a big issue. But if you can get someone like Federico Chiesa for 35, 40 million and get rid of Almiron for 25, then to me, that's a fucking no-brainer, that, mate. That's like swapping your clapped-out Cortina for a fucking Ferrari, in my opinion. You know, even if you only drive the bastard 6 times a year, you've still got a Ferrari. Do you know what I'm saying?
the Chiesa deal, I think he's a cracking player. I mean, the injury issue is a concern. I don't think he's perhaps hit the heights that he probably had a couple of seasons ago.
Yeah.
Certainly when he was at Fiorentina, I thought he looked sensational. He's quieting down a little bit. He's still scoring. He's still creating chances. He's still, you know, he's creating goals. I don't think that's a bad shot. I think Ryan Cherki is a great shout. I think he would be a terrific signing. Chiesa, it's difficult, isn't it? Because now you've got that front three, you know, the notorious BIG. Is he going to come and want to sit behind Anthony Gordon? I'm not sure he comes in as a second fiddle. And again, I guess you wait and you see what Minter looks like when he comes back and he plays with this squad. because he could be that answer. He could be the one that comes in and gives you the option from the right, you know, alongside a Jacob Murphy, and sit behind Anthony Gordon for that position. We don't know enough about Minter playing here.
Mm.
He's had a cracking season, but it is the Eredivisie. So there is a huge gap, but he certainly looks the part. You know, he scores goals, he creates goals, he's full of confidence. So I think seeing him in pre-season, seeing what he looks like when he comes back and playing in and amongst this squad, I think that's probably more likely than spending 40-something million on Federico Chiesa, because, again, I just think that money is, the comment before, I think that money is better spent elsewhere on a striker and a couple of centre-backs and probably a left-back as well, to be honest with you. So I think he'd be a good sign-in. I'm not so sure it works now.
Yeah, well, I mean, that could all depend on the incoming director of football. Now, we all heard about Dan Ashworth earlier. Obviously, old Sir Jim Twatcliffe was doing the London Marathon, and was it Gabby Yorath, who was a Newcastle fan, was talking to him through gritted teeth, God bless her. Very professional, Gabby. Well, I'll call him a wanker. You probably did it in your head a few times. We know you did. We can see it all over your face. But she was obviously asking about Ashworth. He had a bit of a piss and a moan about, you know, all these people to come in at the club and they're all gone, and you would poach people's staff, Jim. So that's what happens.
Pay the money, and they'll not spend their entire season on garden leave or have to spend that long. If you front up and pay what's what's being asked, but at least negotiate a decent value, as it seems they now have decided to do, then that doesn't happen.
Yeah. Gabby Logan, that's the one. Wasn't that Gabby Yorath? I thought she married somebody. Was that a maiden?
She was Yorath. Now she's now Logan.
Now she's Logan. My bad. But you know who I mean, Kev. You know what I mean. But anyway, going back to the point about director of football. So if Dan Ashworth is to be gone, the story goes, and I think Mark Douglas has published a story saying that Newcastle are getting very close to sealing the deal for director of football. Now, some of the front runners, apparently they want somebody with Premier League experience. So I think we're leaning more towards this chap. But on the Chiesa scenario, all of a sudden we've become front runners for Chiesa. Does that mean the Paolo Maldini links are a bit stronger than what they initially appeared? Is Chiesa a player that Maldini's identified to bring in? Apparently Chiesa's been on the radar since the takeover took place, but would an incoming Paolo Maldini think, oh, Chiesa's a player I want to bring with us from Serie A? You know, that could possibly be something in there. But with the talk that the club want Premier League experience, I think it's leaning more towards Paul Mitchell. So Paul Mitchell, 42 years old, had previous experience right across the world. I think it was Leipzig, New York City, and obviously Spurs as well. So his name has been in and around for quite a while, Mark, and it seems to be that he seems to be one of the front runners, really, in terms of the director of football. What's your kind of take on both of those? I mean, some of the guys are already jumping up about Maldini. It's that global presence, isn't it, of who Paolo Maldini is and the reach he would have across the world. But with the club saying the one Prem experience, do you think it's going to end up being more Mitchell than Maldini? What's your kind of thought process on that?
I am sorry, but every time anybody says the name Mitchell, I think Phil and Grant. No,
he's poor. He's the one who kept his hair and had a better job. That's him, mate. Yeah, he's not the old gangster. You know,
I just hear the name Mitch and I immediately think of EastEnders. I don't even watch it. I think it's utter trash. But
I'd have some Cockney fans in the chat, mate. You might be offending them.
Each to their own. I hate it.
Mark's more Emmerdale. More animals than that for Mark. That's why he likes Emmerdale. He likes
Give me the soap opera that is the Premier League any day of the week, mate. Honestly,
we'll talk about that in a minute. We'll talk about that in a minute.
But no, Maldini's would be a huge coup. I think he's the greatest defender I've ever seen in my lifetime. I think he has that gravitas, doesn't he, for players coming. He has the name to attract, especially for players from Serie A as well. So I think he would be a terrific one. But I think if Newcastle are going down there, they want Premier League experience. then fine. If you've got experience from elsewhere in Europe as well, it's exactly what you want at this point in time, because you're not just bringing in Premier League players, you're not just scouting that. You're having to cast the net far and wide to try and bring in players from all age ranges now, because the squad depth and younger players coming in, as we've seen with the likes of Minter and Qual, etc., and the lad who from City, whose name completely escapes me right now, but you're having to develop the entire makeup of the club, yeah. And somebody with that experience across the Premier League is vital, I think, at the moment in that first step, but. Honestly, Maldini would be a sensational name.
Yeah, he's also worked at Southampton, who have got an unbelievable academy system as well. And I think that'll probably really go in Mitchell's favour. It'd be interesting to see what happens with that, guys. But there was another story that broke about our beloved Amanda Staveley. So the woman credited with saving Newcastle from the fat, grubby mitts of Mr. Mike Ashley. So there was a lot of worry that Amanda Staveley was possibly going to be away. There was a few companies that were dissolved in her name in terms of being linked to Newcastle United. A stake, obviously, had shrunk in the club. I think the Rubens stake had grown. So Amanda took to her Instagram to put this on. And if you didn't see, there was loads of pictures of her going around Saudi with a number one Staveley shirt on. So I don't know if that was a hidden message as well, but I'll read this as best as I can. So Amanda Staveley said, just arrived back from Saudi and noticed a lot of messages from fans concerned that I'd stepped down from my role as a director of Newcastle United. I have not. The changes made last week were purely administrative to non-trading subsidiaries after the takeover. Jamie and I stepped in as directors of all companies until we could build an executive team. We remain on the top co of and the board. I'd like to thank everybody for their incredible support over the last few years, and particularly for people taking the time to share their thoughts. We have the best fans in the world, and I'm privileged and proud to be part of your community. So that's good news, Mark, isn't it? Because we don't want this amazing woman going anywhere. She's been incredible for this football club, and not just for the men's team, the women's team as well.
That's exactly what I was going to say. When you look at the progress from the women's team the last 2 years as well, and she's been fundamental in getting things really kicked into gear, that side of things, not to take away from the manager and the players, but she's a big supporter of the women's team. So that's a huge one for me. But it's, I think, just the presence, just the fact that, as Luke's just put in the comments there, just that there is that unbelievable feeling of warmth and love for her because of what she did to get the club away, or to help to get the club away from Ashley. And I think there was unbelievable amounts of worry from people on social media when they saw this, and some accounts just really kind of quickly jump into conclusions and stuff. But it is good. I mean, it's good to see the statement come out, and just so now they're obviously dormant parts of the business that were set up post takeover, and those sorts of things have to get closed. And she's still sitting there on the main board. So yeah, it's really good news, because I think she's only one of the biggest faces of the club outside of the playing staff and the management team. Then she's become part of the Newcastle fabric now.
Absolutely. And she's done a phenomenal job as well, to be fair. I mean, the PIF and Saudi Arabia would just be thrilled of obviously the job that she's done. I mean, there won't be many people who would want to see the back of Amanda Staveley at Newcastle United, short of the Mackams and probably Simon Jordan. Would probably be about the only two I could really think of off the top of my head who'd probably want to see the back of her, really, because she has been absolutely phenomenal. And it was good to see her release that statement, just to kind of quell a few fears, I think, in amongst the fan bases. But we'll come to the end of our show in terms of the segments, and it's the out of tune segment now.
Don't Amanda leave. Staveley, we haven't come to the end of the show.
Not the end of the show. Don't go anywhere, guys. Sorry, the end of the Newcastle part of the show. Beg your pardon, Freudian slip. Now, Amanda Staveley wasn't the only person in the mood for statements this weekend. If you haven't seen this already, the batshit craziness of the statement I'm just about to read to you came courtesy of Nottingham Forest. And I said to Mark, the only way I can antiquate this is either a drunk text or telling a client to fuck off on LinkedIn. So this is the statement that Forest read out. This was posted out on X. So this was after three horrendous penalty decisions didn't go away, to be honest with you. But three extremely poor decisions, three penalties not given, which we simply cannot accept. We warned the PGMOL that the VAR is a Luton fan, that's right, before the game, but they didn't change him. Our patience has been tested multiple times. NFFC will now consider its options. And before anybody jumps in the comments, the options are not to set the gladiators on the PGMOL and chin them by Mark Clattenburg's mates in his phone. But, mate, I've got my take on that. What was your take on that from Nottingham Forest? Where have we come in football when that is the statement, man?
Yeah, I didn't like the way that they did it. Statement two, which came today, was much better.
Yeah, so better worded.
it was far better. And yesterday, that petulant child, that's a toddler or a teenager kicking off that they haven't got what they want out of it. Number two, which came today, which was a far more reasoned approach.
Somebody else has got the login from the crazy owner.
Yeah, I think the owner had it yesterday, and then the press officer grabbed and changed the password to the X account. It's a much more reasoned statement. It makes far more sense, and I get it. I mean, the whole thing about him being a Luton fan, both sides are battling against Luton for that final relegation spot. So it sort of makes no difference really to either if they're a Luton fan, because they can't call against both sides. You know, if you do, you get a point in that game. That's probably worse for Luton than the fact that both teams are picking up points when they're not. So I still go back to an awful lot of this. There's an awful lot in terms of refereeing where the people scream corruption and scream. I just think they're incompetent. I think they're just rubbish. And they're awful. And we've seen, I mean, it's not just limited to the Premier League. We saw in Europe this week as well. If anybody hasn't seen the 2-minute video from one of the West Ham fans showing the decisions that went against them in that game, they were absolutely shocking. They really, really were. And I think there's just a fundamental lack of any decent kind of officials at the moment, right across the board, and the standard has dropped massively, and an awful lot of that I think has to do with VAR, because they're not willing to make their own decisions anymore, and as it seems, VAR are not willing to make decisions for them either. So it's not working.
I get that and I agree with that, but there is a professional decorum football clubs have to operate in, and that ain't one of them. You know, I mean, where do you draw the line? Do you turn around when you get a bad decision and say, we told the PGMOL that the VAR is a complete bell end, and we warned him about that, and he's not allowed to be the VAR because he's a bell end and we don't like him and he's a prick. You know, like, you know, where do you draw the line with it? You can't attack someone's integrity like that. But I must admit, Carragher and Neville were jumping up and down about this stuff, and they very much pick and choose their battles, these two. You know, they don't say anything about Klopp being the way he is. They don't say anything about Manchester United behaving the way they do. You know, but they do jump on Forest. I mean, you know, Neville was quick to say he thought that Clattenburg should resign from that job. We did a video on this. I didn't like that role in general. I thought it was Forest trying to flex to the PGMOL, saying, we've got a guy here who knows all your dirty secrets, so you can't pull any fast ones on us. And it's backfired on them completely, because now they've just been done
exactly
by three bad penalty decisions. Almost, I think they've pissed off the PGMOL so much with Clattenburg being there that almost they're going out of their way to screw Forest, inadvertently. You know what I mean? Just to say, we'll show you lot, getting an ex-referee in there.
Yeah. And on Carragher, wasn't he the one that was screaming for a replay of a Liverpool game earlier in the season as well?
He said he didn't.
You're right. Pick your battles, man. I don't think it was the right way to go. I kind of get the sentiment, but they did. They wrote to the PGMOL about the referee. That's what they've said in their second statement, that they'd said that they didn't want the backlash for them. Not quite sure that's what they really meant. But if they've written it like that after the game, I've no problem with it. just it's just not a good look for a football club's official account to come out and act like one of us. Do you know what I mean? The kind of shit we would say.
Speak for yourself. I think we'd be a bit more eloquent, mate. About
well, you're doing probably, yeah. But I get, you know, it's that sort of stuff where you're not expecting the professional club account to come out and say something like that. Be pissed off with it, absolutely. But I think there's a line. I think they were ever so slightly over it with that one.
Yeah, but Duncan's off to bed. Good to see you, Duncan. Thanks for being in the chat, mate. We haven't got much longer left. We've got a couple of more things to go, mate. But watch us on the catch-up for the rest of it. But yeah, so there's been cup action this week as well. Before we get onto the UK domestic cups, we've got to give him a shout-out because he is one of our players after all. Yankuba Minta has had a cracking weekend, Mark, as we can see there. is Mark really enjoyed this bit because they even said the name like a Chava from
Winners.
Winners of the Cup League, which I thought was absolutely brilliant. So that's his first ever career trophy for Yankuba Minta. So the boy's already a winner, which is absolutely class. He got sent off in the final, though, didn't he? Two yellow cards.
I mean, when you see he's had a terrific weekend, maybe he's not so good to start with getting himself sent off, but it ended up all right. So
it ended up possibly could have got sent off for wearing a dressing gown on the pitch whilst holding his first ever trophy. It's very strange that is. You know, it's almost the kind of thing you'd expect to see some kind of like drug lord wearing, walk around the house with bitches hanging on his arm, really, with some kind of weird green dressing gown like that. But each to their own, Yankuba. But congratulations to the young man.
Can't knock him for being comfy, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Congratulations to the young man, absolutely. Right, so we'll move on to the next section then. Yeah, the cup action, obviously, domestically. Now, Manchester City beat Chelsea. There was controversy there. A handball that should or shouldn't have been. Pep Guardiola moaning after the game. He has too many games to play, to which point Alan Shearer was the only person who said, well, you could rotate the players, mate, whilst Gary Lineker was climbing up Pep Guardiola's arsehole to lick the winnets out of it. Grow a pair of balls, Lineker, and fucking tell him to stop moaning like a twat. He's got about 400 players in his squad. Use your fucking squad, you moany-faced bastard. And actually, I think some of the championship teams were quick to say they played 4 games in 10 days, while he played 4 games in 14 days. You know, so yeah, remember that, Pep, when you're moaning about your cups.
One of the non-league sides, I'm sure, tweeted out, and they, in that space of time, they got a game on the 9th, on the 11th, on the 13th, on the 15th, and on the 17th. And they're going, are you really complaining about this? When the lads that are playing in that side then have to go back to their normal day job the following day. They don't get to go to some cushy recovery thing. They're putting it out there for 90 minutes for, you know, 6 times in 12 days, and then go back to their day job in the middle because they're not professional sides and they're having to go and earn their living elsewhere as well. So, yeah, when you get to go back to your cushy training facility and rest up and have all the benefits of chefs in there to give you all the right nutritional food, all that kind of stuff, stop whining. It's 4 days. Get a grip, man. 4 days.
I agree with George. He is a lapdog. He definitely licks the boots of the likes of Pep and Klopp and stuff like that. But going back to the other big game, we were all wrapped into this game, the Manchester United-Coventry game. So Manchester United were 3-0 up, cruising. Everybody was saying, well, you know, there's the final City, Manchester United. You know, two teams that apparently see the FA Cup as an inconvenience, having the final together. Then all of a sudden, Coventry provided the magic that we all knew the FA Cup was. You know, it was quite ironic. I think I posted this on Twitter. It was quite ironic in a week where the Premier League completely dismissed the Championship. They almost stood up and said, we're still here. And they showed the Premier League exactly what they're all about. They roared back to 3-3. And then they scored a fourth goal that, in my opinion, should have been given. I didn't think that was offside. I think VAR ruined that decision. I really do. For me, that wasn't an offside, Mark. Just before we get into the bit at the end with the penalties, and you know what's going to happen when we get into there. What was your opinion on that? Did you think that was an offside or not?
It's really fucking harsh, isn't it? It's way too really, close. Really harsh on them. I still go down the lines. I've said this an awful lot. I think there has to be daylight. There has to be clear gap between those two. Those two lines are on top of each other.
Kev's bang on. It went over the top of his foot.
I think you're absolutely right. I also don't think they've got the point of contact with the ball right, because you can almost see Callum O'Hare's got two right legs in that shot. It's not. It doesn't look right. There's been another clip going around of somebody's view from the other side, and somebody put a clip with the ball in the air going, oh, well, this is the point of contact. Well, the ball was on the floor. So the point of contact must have been around about where they've got it. But the fact that, and I maintain it, actually, when we first started doing this sort of stuff, I did write a bit about VAR. And the quality of the cameras isn't good enough to get the exact
point of contact. It's like a Nokia 3310. It's dreadful.
So the difference in depending on how fast you're running as well, is the gap between each frame can be huge. Mm. So, and you see it from the other angle, that is it Hadji, that the lad that was caught offside?
Yeah, Hadji, right.
Ever so slightly supposedly offside. And then a frame or two later, we suddenly, a yard behind Aaron Wan-Bissaka. And you just can't get a clear enough view of offside when the cameras just don't give you, that clear sort of, well, I guess sort of 4-8K kind of visual. They're blurred. They're not good enough. And you can't get the exact point of contact nailed on. And you can't get the line right on the foot. Who was it earlier in the season when they did the offside lines for?
Isak, I think it was.
I mean, the foot looked about 3 feet long. The blur in between the two frames, and his foot was two or three times as big as it should have been, and they still gave it. You just can't tell where that is. It's just not good enough. The FA should have, for my mind, and it's too slow as well, which is the other problem. But to me, the FA should have brought in, the Premier League should have brought in the semi-automatic one, which is done much more quickly. It's much more clear. It just makes far more sense. It may still have been offside given that, but at least we can trust it a little bit more than watching that those lines being drawn. And how many times have we looked and ones have looked, at the wrong angle when they've drawn them or up the from... When they've drawn the ball from the floor and it just looks wrong. Genuinely, at times, looks like a toddler's got a crayon and just thought, I'm going to fucking draw this.
They've got the kids involved in Etch-a-Sketch just drawing lines.
Probably.
That's what it is. There'll be stars and like circles above somebody's head in the next image that you see. But it was embarrassing. I felt really sorry for Coventry. But it went to penalties. Manchester United ended up winning on penalties. I'll get into what happened after that at the end. So Roy Keane absolutely buried them on punditry because Maguire came out and Bruno Fernandes came out, who was also a dick, by the way, mouthing off to the Coventry goalkeeper. And he said that they showed character. Roy Keane said there's no character there. And he actually said something that was quite poignant about this Manchester United team. He said he's really starting to dislike them. And that's a Manchester United legend. And for me, as me and Mark had this conversation, as fans of a certain age, we hated Manchester United in the 90s because they were really good. But this team you hate just because they're arseholes. And there's no bigger arsehole than this little prick right here. And that's Anthony, the £85 million Brazilian winger who straight after Højlund scored the winning penalty, most of his teammates didn't even go and celebrate because they were embarrassed and nearly threw the game away. This little shithouse cupped his ear and started winding up the Coventry players who have just had their hearts broken and missed out on, an FA Cup final. The first time, God knows how many years, if not the whole history.
They won it in the late 80s.
So the first time probably since then. And to be fair, every Coventry player was gutted, apart from De Silva, who saw the funny side of that EA Cup, to be fair, in that picture. But it was just disgraceful from Anthony. We've seen this before, Mark, and he wins wanker of the week for me, without a shadow of a doubt. And he had some close runners. He had the West Brom fans that set the flare off on the train and got the train cancelled. And he had this poor bastard that was the Blackburn goalkeeper, Pears, who had an absolute fucking mare. Was Enkelman from Aston Villa Birmingham game when he managed to let the ball go under his leg and then he fell over and knocked in the back of his own net. So thankfully for him, Anthony has rescued him and won that title as wanker of the week. They're just no class there, Mark. No class whatsoever from the player. Fucking
no, and for a player that's been utterly shit as well. At least if you'd earned the right to be a shit house yeah. like that. He's got. I know some of the Coventry players were given it, and Fernandez. I'm gonna go against everything I believe in here.
You can't stick up for Fernandez. You fucking.
I'm gonna stick up for Bruno Fernandez in that regard because the goalkeeper was giving him shit back. So he scored and he gave him verbals back. I don't mind that because that's in that moment. But when you've been thoroughly outplayed for the last part of that game and you've been borderline getting knocked out by it, you're Manchester United, you're supposed to be winning this sort of stuff, supposedly, and you've nearly been knocked out in the FA Cup semi-final by Coventry, who were in the Championship, and not going up. It's not like they're sitting top of the league. They're a good Championship side, but... And there are some players there that will probably go on and play elsewhere at a higher level too. You just know it's horrible. I can almost forgive it, somebody like a Bruno Fernandes for doing something like that because he's kind of done it at this level. He's done it at the highest level. He's won stuff. He's earned the right to be a shithouse, despite the fact that I hate him. But Anthony's done fuck all. He's an absolute flop. He's 85 million worth of shit. He's a dreadful, dreadful footballer. Ajax have absolutely taken them to the cleaners for him. And it was awful. The classiest bit, though, and I'd give Harry Maguire all the credit in the world, is the second that penalty was scored, he turned left and went and shook the hands of all the Coventry players. Well, that shithouse did that. That tells you the difference.
Yeah, absolutely that, mate. He's just... He's just got no class, mate. Absolutely no class whatsoever. And he is shit. Man United will bin that little fuckwit off as quick as humanly possible in the summer. I'm pretty sure for that. As Scooby says there, Anthony subbed on the 66th minute, was 3-0 before he come on the pitch. Bellend needs some more self-awareness. Absolutely. I mean, this is the thing. They took two teenagers off in Garnacho and Kobbie Mainoo, and they were 3-0 up, and then they nearly lost the whole fucking game. I mean, Marcus Rashford got booed by his own fans coming off. He was useless, Marcus Rashford. Yeah, absolutely terrible. I don't know what's going on with that kid, but if he's on that plane ahead of Anthony Gordon, honestly, I will be fucking spitting feathers if that is the case. And I don't even support England in the fucking Euros. I'm a Scot by birth, but I'll be furious for Anthony Gordon if Marcus Rashford is on that plane ahead of him. Absolutely 100%. So a couple of other things to cover off in our tunes, and one bottle job and one non-bottle job. So the first bottle job, which you'll laugh your nuts off being Arsenal fans, as you all are in the comments, this is reportedly the new Arsenal shirt from Adidas, actually, who's making our kits. Now, I think Adidas, or whoever's designed the Premier League kits, is definitely either a Spurs fan or a Toon fan, because if you can look very carefully there looks to be the shape of a bottle in the Arsenal shirt, and that's perfect for those bunch of bottlers that seem to bottle every single competition that they're in. Champions League, Cups, Premier League. Mikel Arteta was asked to comment on the shirt, and he just said, "It's a disgrace," is what he said, mate. But what was your thoughts on that shirt, mate?
Well, my initial thinking was it a Prime thing? Was it something like that? It looks more like a bottle of Luke, is it? I think it's a piss take. It would be hilarious if that was the real one, because the amount of times they have bottled it, when it comes to the league or to Champions League or Cup games, that would be hilarious for something like that to be real. I can't see it, but would be fun. I love just how good it looks in terms of how realistic it really looks. So we do hope that that one is true.
Yeah, absolutely. And one last thing to finish on. A non-bottle job. This guy just seems to be going from strength to strength, Mark. So if you didn't know already, everybody, it was the El Clasico this weekend. So after beating Manchester City in the Champions League with a bit of a weird performance, Real Madrid and Barcelona went toe-to-toe. And that man again, Mark, Jude Bellingham, he scores the winner. in a 3-2 victory. Standing celebrating at the end alongside Hosselu, of all fucking people. I still can't believe this bloke. He is living the goal movie. He really is. He's going to end up in the Mexican World Cup, I think, in his last installment. So, you know, what career arc he's had. But Jude Bellingham, once again, Mark, I mean, what a player this guy is. The biggest game on earth, and he just strokes in the third goal with ease. You know, just absolutely phenomenal, man.
The Americans use the term clutch to describe that sort of thing, where, you know, come up with it right at the deck. He absolutely is. I mean, he's just...
Yeah.
Is there a better...
Best player in the world right
I'm
now?
I'm just yes. about to say, is there a better player in the world than Jude Bellingham?
I'm not sure there is. I'm not sure there is really right now.
He's phenomenal. And if Gareth Southgate can't get the best out of him going into a tournament, then he rightly deserves to be marched out of... the England job, because you've got the best player in the world right now. You've got two of the best players in the world right now playing in your midfield / attack, and Phil Foden as well. So, but yeah, I mean, Jude is just simply sensational and comes at trumps. That the biggest talking point about that game was not Jude Bellingham. It was the goal that wasn't given. And because there's no goal line technology, The ball was clearly over the line for Barcelona. Barcelona were fuming. And the goalkeeper saves it from well behind the line. Funnily enough, one of the Barca players makes a beeline for the referee, tapping where his watch would be. There's no goal line technology here, so you can't review it.
He forgot his place.
Yeah, it was funny.
Absolutely superb. Absolutely superb.
There's one more I did want to say in terms of shithouse. We're talking about players that deserve the right for being a shithouse. Ashley Young woke up this morning and chose to be a shithouse.
That was naughty. That was very, very funny, though. Absolutely. But yeah, I mean, to be fair, it's very brave of a player coming from a player who's there's actual video evidence of the bird shitting in his mouth. So I'd be very careful if I was him, because that's about to be pulled out of the archives, I'm sure, but every Nottingham Forest fan going. But yes, quite a lot of stuff to get through there, even though we haven't even bloody played. So we've still got to play. As you know, we're playing Wednesday night. We'll be back with the post-match analysis. Make sure you check out the channel. Like the video, guys, if you haven't already. Subscribe if you can. Help get us to that 8,000 mark is going to probably be our next milestone. Now we're going past the 7-4. We'll get the 7-5 first, and then we'll see where we go from there. One step at a time, exactly. But we appreciate each and every single one of you who smashed that button. We really do. We love doing this, and we love the fact that you guys love us doing this, and we'll continue to do it for as long as you enjoy it and we enjoy it as well. So thank you, everybody who's hit that button to like the video and watches all of the stuff that we do. So we're going to shoot off now. You have a cracking day, evening, afternoon, wherever it is you are in the world watching us right now. Keep it evermore. We'll be back with some more content soon. Have a bell, everyone. We'll catch us later.
See you guys. Cheers.